And you're hearing the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comics for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I run around like a chicken this week, getting ready for the Oscars.
Oh, yeah, aren't we all? And Stephen Thompson, what do you do?
I run around like a chicken getting ready for South by Southwest for NPR Music.
I believe it. Well, it's good to have all of you here. And the first thing we're going to talk about this week, we're bringing back something that we chatted about once in the past. And that is a topic we like to call people we are pulling for. And we never run out of these kind of people is the nice thing. Because as you look around the desolate landscape of culture, I would say, you see many people who could really stand to do a little better than they're doing right now. Perhaps they're stranded in that desolate landscape in some figurative broken down diner. And we would like to see them rescued and carried off to a better locale. So I'm going to start with Glenn. Glenn, who are you pulling for?
Well, the guy I'm pulling for doesn't need my help. He doesn't need me to pull for him. He's doing pretty well. He's a voice actor.
I think you missed the point, Glenn.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm still pulling for this guy. I still have an unabashed love for everything this guy does.
Okay.
I'd follow this guy through the valley of the shadow of death.
It's Chris Evans,
shadow,
isn't it?
Valley of death.
Is it Chris Evans?
It's not. It's a different kind of following. His name is H. John Benjamin. You've heard his voice on Dr. Katz, among other things, back in the 90s. Home Movies was another thing. Lucy, Daughter of the Devil. Bob's Burgers right now on Fox. And Archer on FX. He is a guy who has done a lot of voice work in a lot of different sort of Adult Swimmy kind of cartoons. He is not a man of a thousand voices. He is not Frank Welker. Frank Welker is a guy who does a lot of different voices.
He's a man of a thousand voices,
right? There. That's hence the sobriquet. H. John Benjamin has the one voice, and it's very recognizable, but he can play both a kind of a D-bag secret agent, as he does in Archer.
Mm-hmm. You stood me up again last night!
What happened was, did you see Brian's song? Same thing, pretty much, happened. I helped a guy with cancer. Look, I'm really sorry, Carol, but I couldn't.
It's Cheryl!
I know, Carol. Cheryl.
Or the hapless schlub like he does on Bob's Burgers and Dr. Katz.
Let's do a scene right now. Come on. Let's do an improv.
An improv?
Yeah, an improv. Hi. How are you? I'm just standing out here.
So am I.
It's cold out.
Not really. I have a big coat on.
See, you're good. You're good. That was
like
good.
It.
Yes.
I don't like it.
That was a whole scene.
There's something about his voice, and there's something also about his ability to riff and to improvise that I just love watching this guy, watching cartoons of this guy's voice, basically, put it that way. I first became aware of him back in the 90s where he played Benny, Los Benitos, Ben, on the son of Dr. Katz. It was such a warm performance and such a sort of flat, affectless of performance at the same time. So here's a clip from that, which is just a hell of a lot of fun.
Dad, the rice, you have really outdone yourself. The rice is great.
Oh, thanks, man. That you know what? That means a lot to me. When
Dad, the
you
rice is perfect. That. I mean, it's moist.
Yeah.
It's perfectly cooked. You timed it right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so tender. But it's not mushy, you know,
right.
It yields to the bite. But not without a little struggle, you know? I mean, you got to still open your mouth and chew it. It's not that
sure.
It just goes right in.
Well, it's not going to bite itself, but...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
He has done some actual acting work, but it's usually just little bit parts. He had a very small part in a movie called Next Stop Wonderland, which was an indie romantic comedy in the 90s that kind of wore its indie romantic comedy vibe on its on the sleeve of its oversized thrift shop sweater, if you follow what I'm getting there. But
I sure do.
I'd like to see this guy do more actual acting work, although I do think voice acting is pretty much the cushiest gig in Hollywood and possibly the world. So
yeah.
He doesn't need me to help, but this guy, you just should seek him out. All his stuff is good.
And you're pulling for H. John Benjamin.
H. John Benjamin.
That's Glenn Weldon's vote. Trey Graham, who are you pulling for?
I'm pulling for Spider-Man this week.
Again?
Aww. Again.
I think
again.
You were pulling for Julie Taymor last time we
that
did
that. Was some
this.
Time ago. That was before anybody had actually seen it.
Now you're pulling for it even more.
Yeah, now I'm pulling for it even more because there have been rumors within the last week, although they are still officially unconfirmed as we tape this, that the people behind Spider-Man on Broadway, the musical, have reached out to a guy named Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa to help whip it into shape. You may have read that he is both a comics writer and a playwright. And this is good not because it seems like a good idea at face value, though you could certainly argue that it does, and I would. But it's also good, and it makes me a little happy this week not to jump ahead too far, because I used to know Roberto a little bit, and I've actually seen a couple of his plays.
Oh, sorry. Was my microphone on?
Thank you.
Steven, you are not one to ooh.
Yeah.
By any
anyway, I've actually seen a couple of his plays, and my recollection is that he's got a kind of spectacular vision, an appetite for the surreal combined with a truly dark sensibility. And to me, that seems like it might be a good fit with what Julie Taymor is doing with the show. Also, he came up through the Yale drama program, so he knows how to write a tight 90-minute play. And that kind of discipline is, from everything I have read, one of the things that is lacking in this show, right? Mm-hmm. So that, always assuming that Roberto is actually doing what he's rumored to be doing, is the thing that I am pulling for this week, I think.
Yeah, I've never seen any of his plays, but I've certainly read his comics, and I've read some of his plays, mm-hmm. and I think this is a good development as well.
Yeah.
My question about that show is, will it ever open?
Well, they certainly seem to believe that it will, although, of course, when the word trickled out about this in the New York Times and in other venues, there was immediate speculation about whether this would mean another postponement of the official opening date.
Because the official opening date is still March 15th,
March 15th,
right?
Yes.
And if you're bringing a new writer on and it's late February...
Indeed.
One would think maybe not March 15th.
I think when I look at that project, I see what's $65 million sort of accident-plagued play. I just think, mm-hmm. what could go wrong?
Well, the thing is, it's making a ton of money. So,
yeah,
you know,
everybody wants to see it.
Their motivation to change it is actually somewhat limited. So I'm interested in the fact that they're doing it anyway.
Yeah,
so
as Bob Mondello pointed out on the Monkey See blog last week, they actually saw an uptick in the box office numbers in the week after some of the most brutal reviews in Broadway history.
So what better day to open than the Ides of March?
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. Stephen Thompson, who are you pulling for?
You know, it's funny. While I was preparing to, who am I rooting for, I actually went to TMZ.com, which I have never done in my entire life, in the hopes of finding... Just a really unlikely character that I'm.
You were looking for pictures of Justin Bieber's new haircut.
I was also looking for pictures of Justin Bieber's new haircut. Finding neither, I have decided instead. I couldn't find anybody to root for at TMZ.com. I'm sorry, or pictures of Justin Bieber's new haircut. So I decided that I am continuing to pull for Ken Jennings, the delightfully charming, sort of underratedly charming Jeopardy super champion who was recently, as we all know, bested by Watson, the IBM supercomputer.
He was.
And who...
You better be pulling for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Ken Jennings, first of all, besides being humanity's only hope,
right.
Quipped at the time, I, for one, welcome our new computer overlords. And I just think anybody who can just immediately, paraphrasing one of the best Simpsons lines ever... in response to being whomped by a computer, is somebody worth rooting for. And I just have always, in every interview, and I think Linda and I have discussed this in the past, that Ken Jennings is a delightfully charming figure. And I root for him to continue to somehow find a way to stay in the public eye, despite the fact that all he's known for is being on Jeopardy.
He wrote a piece for Slate after this happened, in which he made a very funny comment about how playing against Watson was very similar to playing against any highly successful long-running Jeopardy champion, in that... Oh, it was something like that Watson was highly efficient and spoke in an emotionless monotone and had never known the touch of a woman.
There you go.
Yep.
It was a very good line. It was very. I am a big fan of Ken Jennings. When I said that on Twitter, I got a couple people coming back saying, "Oh, I think he's cocky and arrogant. I don't like him." And I do not truck with those people.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I mean,
that at all.
I understand that. We all have different tastes, but I do not truck with those people.
If I won $1 million on Jeopardy, I'd be pretty cocky and arrogant. I have not won $1 million on Jeopardy, and I'm pretty cocky.
And, you know, he's famous also for – he did the wonderful thing where the answer was a word for a sort of disreputable person that's also a gardening implement, and the word was rake.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
he
didn't.
Oh, he did. He said ho. It was pretty much close to too hot for Jeopardy. So yep. I kind of dug that too. So yeah, I think good choice, Ken Jennings. I like that choice. I decided to go with an actress I like a lot who has found herself involved in a high profile, potentially it's a coup for her to be cast, except that everyone thinks the project is going to be a gigantic disaster, and that would be Miss Adrienne Palicki, who was on Friday Night Lights as Tyra Collette, one of the best characters on Friday Night Lights. Really, she made a lot out of a character who could have just sort of been the town bad girl. She also was in Fox's Lone Star, the famous Lone Star, which everyone loved and lasted two episodes. Last fall. And she has been cast in the new TV Wonder Woman, a project run by David E. Kelly. David E. Kelly of Ally McBeal and Boston Legal. And some good shows, too. Anyway, David E. Kelly, you know, a guy who's very hard to predict, but not particularly famous for writing women super well. And this script has kind of gone around, and there are some people who have seen it. I have not seen it. The people who have seen it have nothing nice to say about it. Nothing. And on the surface, she is a fantastic choice for Wonder Woman. She is a strong actress. She is charismatic. She is steely, but she is still vulnerable. It's sort of everything that you want out of somebody who could, you know, convincingly play a superhero. But the problem is, of course, that if it's a terrible script, it's not going to matter. And I had tweeted at the time that I heard she had been cast that this seemed like good news, and so did some other people, at which point the people who have seen the script said you would only think that if you hate her. Oh. So, so exactly. Yeah. I'm pulling for her in the sense that I would love for this to be a good show. I would love for it to be a surprise. I would love for it to pull out sort of the better part of David E. Kelly. I would love to have them completely revamp the script and have it turn out to be way better than it seems like it's going to be. I'm happy to have her continue to be in the public eye. Sometimes people do kick around until they find something where they can be successful. That's happened with some actors who have eventually found their way into a good role. So I'm pulling for her in the sense that I think she's a terrific actress and it's a great opportunity for her in terms of profile, but I don't think anybody thinks the project's going to be successful.
Well, yeah. I mean, you often see pilots to shows that are terrible,
sure,
sent back for retooling.
Right.
I mean, I got to think it's probably a little early to write it off based on a script.
Yeah,
I think
agree.
That's true.
There is a scene, there's a couple actually videos online of actresses auditioning for the role, and they don't come out and say this is for this, but if you jibe the...
but they've got a WW on their chest.
Yeah. But there's a scene mentioned in a lot of the script reviews I've read that this seems to be a version of, and what you can tell is, boy, I'm glad this person did not get this role. Wow. That is pretty terrible. I don't know what she's going to do with it. I'm looking forward to it because she's, I think she's great too. And there have been some people who were, you could say that they're fanboy apologists who said, it doesn't suck completely, but let's agree that that's a low bar.
Yeah.
Not sucking completely.
Yeah.
Well, Glenn Weldon, if you were the executive producer of this show, what would you think that a good new Wonder Woman television series, what, give me three things that it's got to have to be successful.
Bustier.
Bracelets.
Linda Carter. No. The character in the comics hasn't had a really iconic interpretation. She started off back in the day as a very weird creation from a very weird man who had a lot of weird bondage issues.
Right.
And
if you've never, incidentally, if you've never heard Glenn explain about her origins and being made from clay, we do have a past show that we will link to in which there is an explanation of this so funny that I used to listen to it on the train over and over and giggle and attract attention.
She was once a little green slab of clay. what she needs to be is strong, assertive. She needs to inspire hope. Her deal is she doesn't necessarily represent America. She represents the sort of ideal, capital I. I do think we need to spin. if nothing else, the Linda Carter montage of her spinning to turn into the costume, that's even been incorporated into the comics now. That's just a big part. We can lose the invisible plane.
I was just
going
to ask you about that. Is it the invisible jet, is that canon or is that just
back in the day, but then there was a reboot around 1986 where she flies like a person.
The invisible jet to me, you know, if you're making a TV show and you want to make it for cheap, it's like some of the things we've talked about, where if you have invisible villains, then yeah. you can just walk around punching
just
the air.
Thumping them.
And yeah. it's kind of like with the same thing with the invisible jet. You could just put her in a plexiglass chair mm-hmm. on a wire mm-hmm. and just fly her through the air and be mm-hmm. like, it's the invisible jet. And it is so fancy.
Yeah.
It's just invisible.
Yeah, I would say that she shouldn't sit around pining for an ideal man like pretty much every David E. Kelly show in the history of
that's very
David
true.
E. Kelly shows. However, in the early days of the character, that's kind of what she did. Choke, sob. Steve Trevor, choke, sob. I mean, there was a
Steve
lot of that.
Trevor.
Yeah. But this could be a lot of fun.
Do you tell the story with an overtone of camp, with a knowing wink? Do you tell it straight on? Is it a dark Batman-style reboot? How do you come at it?
Again,
now?
She's wearing a star-spangled bathing suit, so there's only so much gravitas she can be afforded.
Story of my life.
Yeah. But I
maybe they'll change it to a star-spangled three-piece suit.
Oh, well,
she is an attorney, I think,
you know what
in
they
this
should
one.
Give her is a jacket. That's what they should freaking give her. I think Adrian Palicki is a really good development, but let's wait and see.
Yeah, let's wait and see. Good plan. The next thing we're going to get into is, you know, we were talking a little bit today about the fact that everybody's got their things, and we talked about this a little in the context of the new announcement that Amazon is going to have a streaming service as part of Amazon Prime, which if you sign up for it, you get free 2-day shipping. They're going to now include, for people who have Amazon Prime, free streaming of a bunch of stuff a la Netflix. And we kind of got into this, and we were talking about the fact that everybody has a tech thing that they just do not get, a blind spot similar to, we've talked in the past about pop culture blind spots. Stephen Thompson, tech blind spot.
You know, I never, ever, ever want to be that guy who just rejects this stuff outright. Because every time you do that, you're always like, oh, this internet fad. You know, that hilarious clip of Bryant Gumbel and is it Katie Couric?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, Bryant Gumbel and Katie Couric just like, what is the at sign? You know, and it was years after
internet?
That was years after I had an email address.
Yes.
And I am not a notorious early adopter.
No. Yeah, but you were what, 18? Come on.
Well, I was I was a radical young person,
I was
a Mountain Dew
amount.
No, I was not 18. I was older.
But, no, I mean, I think we can go back to the concept of being notionally open. I don't think it has to be an outright rejection, let alone a condemnation of people who have embraced whatever the thing is.
Good, because boy, do I hate that.
Right.
Keep your tweets to yourself. Get off my lawn. That can shut it. Oh my God. But I guess the one that I'm currently attempting to learn and struggling a bit with, and have employed the help of my dear friend Linda Holmes, is my dear mother just bought my dear son a Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to figure the damn thing out.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why it baffles me so.
It seems pretty intuitive.
I keep telling him it's not that hard.
I think part of the issue for me is there's also this large gap to reading books.
Yes.
And so perhaps the Kindle is presenting similar barriers, but I'm hoping that I will.
So the thing that you're having trouble with is not so much the Kindle, but, you know, narrative storytelling.
the written word. The written word is presenting all sorts of problems for me. I'm finally very, very, very slowly dipping my toe into these, you know, the turbid waters, as Glenn Weldon would say, of electronic book purchasing and reading. But I've been remarkably, I mean, I guess it would make sense that I've been remarkably pitifully
slow. Is it how books smell? Is that what it is?
yeah, man. You know, you have a library full, you know.
You love the smell of books.
All my music is on vinyl. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the Kindle has been one of the ones that I have just in the current process of struggling to fully master.
Mm-hmm. Trey Graham, blind spot.
Trey Graham, our resident gadget guru.
I have to admit, right up front, to being kind of a gadget geek.
I call you iTrey.
somebody has to. I don't know that I have any gigantic blind spot about a particular thing. I will admit that I was never one of those kids who got into remote control cars.
That's your gadget? Okay.
Remote control cars.
Okay, yeah. Everybody who mocked me for picking the Kindle, can we all pause and scorn Trey?
No, sorry, I've actually just paged through 4 pages of Gizmodo, and I can't find anything that I am nominally or notionally opposed to.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, wow, man.
Heaven's sake, really?
So there's nothing in Sky Mall, in the Sky Mall? That you don't even, you're
okay,
like, sure.
Yes. Okay, yes, come to think of it, golf ball rangefinders.
Good, okay, good.
Golf ball rangefinders.
No interest in that.
We just had to look. Yeah.
This is very upsetting, Trey.
We were counting on you to anchor the segment.
Dishwashers? Yeah.
Dishwashers. How do you feel about the cotton gin?
you're like Andy Rooney over here. What's the deal with dishwashers?
I think that speaks more to a general laziness than
that's not laziness. Dishwashers are easier than washing dishes by.
No, but eventually you have to empty them.
Boy.
You have to empty the sink of dishes.
That's very interesting to me, Trey, that in order to come up with a gadget that you don't embrace, you have to go to the world of children's toys. I mean, Trey, you do have the iPad.
It is true. I have an iPad. I was looking through Gizmodo on my iPad, just trying to find something to talk about. And, you know, I got nothing.
Well, here's the thing.
So you couldn't even use your iPad to cheat at this show.
Exactly.
If I may be Fusty McGrumpy Pants for 5 seconds, is an iPad basically just an overgrown iPhone? Because I have an iPhone. I was like 4 years late, but I got an iPhone. Isn't it just a big iPhone?
The size matters.
Oh, for God.
No, it does.
On any adult.
It's true. No, the interface is different enough, and the scale of the thing is different enough that the way you interact with it is significantly and substantially different, and it makes a qualitative difference to the experience.
Mm. So yes, he's
it's a big iPhone.
You know, Trey, I saw an article in Slate this week where a guy, or maybe it was last week, where a guy actually said, "I bought an iPad, I spent $600, mm-hmm. I never use it. Explain to me why I'm wrong."
Oh, I'm quite the opposite. Case in point, my TiVo has been in an endless reboot for the last week. Can't get it fixed. And normally this is the sort of thing that would keep me up at night until I get it fixed. And I have just unplugged it. And because I can watch stuff on the iPad now, and that's what I'm doing.
But it seems like it does things other things do, is sort of the...
Oh, sure. It does many things other things do.
But does it do anything that other things don't do?
Because it doesn't replace those things.
And I should point out here that it has some very specialized uses, and I have a friend who has a daughter with a speech disability, and it's incredibly helpful to her. And that's, I think, one place where they've really made some unexpectedly large strides and inroads. But I'm talking about, for me, as a person who doesn't have specialized needs.
Mm. Well, when Trey is doing his Star Trek, the original series, LARPing, and playing the role of Nurse Chapel.
It does come in very, comes in very, very handy when you're playing Nurse Chapel. It's true. Wow.
We are really giving you a hard time,
wow,
buddy. Would you like to
You've
explain what your favorite use of your iPad is?
Honestly, Scrabble. It is awesome at Scrabble.
It is awesome at Scrabble.
Yep. It's awesome for playing Scrabble.
You know what's also awesome?
Even if you have a real Scrabble board.
Yeah, all right.
But that's like, awesome. But wait, no, Glenn is just doing pies and windowsills.
Of course he is. Because the reality is that you're not going to take your gigantic wooden Scrabble set, Glenn Weldon. I've
I thought
seen
you
were going
to say my gigantic
house.
Wooden laptop, yes. Which is where I play Scrabble.
You're right, exactly. Yeah. Your gigantic wooden Scrabble set, you're not going to cart it, you're not going to have it with you randomly when you discover that you have an hour and a half to kill waiting for the 10 o'clock movie screening because, you know, you've been to dinner, you've decided to go to a movie, and you're going to sit at the bar with your husband, and you both have iPhones and an iPad, and the pad is the board, and you can keep your tiles on the tile racks on your phones, and it's just
but when you,
really
okay.
cute.
God, all right. Awesome. All right. I should offer up a shameful confession, which is that I don't have TiVo. Mm. I have still...
That is what you should have
See,
picked.
Really, yeah.
That is what you should have picked, is that you have yet to embrace the DVR.
You're like steampunk right there.
It's really true, especially considering Steven's tendency to set 4 VHS tapes to record every Packers game all over the house.
Just so I have them.
VHS tapes, buddy.
VHS tapes.
VHS
no.
tapes.
Titter, titter, titter.
If I can record it.
He's operating under the illusion that he's getting different camera angles, right?
No, yeah. If I can get 4 perfect copies of the game. Do you know the Flaming Lips album Zyrica? Uh-huh. Where it's 4 discs that you play simultaneously. I'm trying to do the same thing, but with the Packers.
Wow.
Anyway, yes, I should. I've been meaning to get DVR, but I'm baffled.
Well, I can help with that, too. Glenn Weldon, Tech Blind Spot.
A week ago, I would have said MMOs, massively multiplayer games. Uh-huh. But spoiler, not saying that anymore. spoiler for the end of the show.
Nice.
I'm not a tech guy. The breed of rage I feel when the computer doesn't do the thing it's supposed to do and the thing that the supercomputer it's supposed to do is the only thing it's supposed to do is blinding. Blinding rage I feel. But in a larger sense, and as everybody around this table knows because we have discussed it off mic many, many times, I am not on Facebook. I am not going on Facebook. Am I the only person who remembers when the hacky sitcom joke was, we have to go over to their house to watch their vacation slides, right? Patty and Selma, thus concludes our Mexican odyssey. Facebook...
is an upsettingly good Patty and Selma.
Facebook is people's vacation slides, the way I put it. I was explaining to my friend, the writer Nathan Englander, the other day, who everybody should follow on Twitter, because he just got on Twitter, that Twitter is about language, and Facebook is about people, and I know which of those two I prefer. I will just say, there are people on Twitter who are talking about, I'm eating a beet salad, nom nom nom. Those people you don't follow.
Right.
Those people you just ignore. The people I follow on Twitter are people who, when they're creating a tweet, read it over before they send it, to whom language is important and the crafting of that language is important, usually for a humorous effect, because that's most of the people I follow, but it can be anybody. When I see Facebook pages for like a website or a television show or something.
Or a podcast.
Or I'm going to make an exception there. I'm going to make a conspicuous exception there. But generally speaking...
But I love you, baby. You're different.
I'm saying. I'll
follow Pop Culture Happy Hour on Facebook.
I'll get there. When I see people responding to the headline of the story, this story is about lemons. I hate lemons. Somebody else said. I love lemons. You're crazy.
But you're talking
Why
about
Why is
strangers.
No one discussing clementines? I have just made a Facebook page about satsumas. It's ridiculous. Oh. It's annoying. It's first thought, best thought. It's instantaneous. It's just somebody driving by at 60 miles an hour shouting out their car window.
But you're talking about the bad part of Facebook.
Yeah,
you're not talking about
just
the part
as,
of Facebook
just as there
that
is, a bad
is friends
part of,
talking to each other.
Yeah,
is right. the good
just
part
as there
of
is a bad part of Twitter that you don't follow. Friend people selectively.
You're talking about the bad part of Facebook. I think you're missing out.
I am in touch with the people that I want to be in touch with. I'm in touch with the people I want to be in touch with from high school. All one of him. Stephen, you mentioned to me the other day that you think of Facebook as cold storage for friendship.
That's right.
Right. What do you keep in cold storage, Stephen? Furs is what you keep in cold storage. Pelts.
The venison your brother-in-law
gave you. The venison your brother.
Elaborate on that line, because I first of all, I want to steal a line that actually supports what you're saying. Somebody on Twitter, I wish I could remember who it was, said that Facebook is for friends who've become strangers. Twitter is for strangers who should be friends. That is a wonderfully Twitter-style, concise way of the get-off-my-lawn-you-kids argument that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side to me, when I say Facebook is cold storage for your friends, I mean that kind of in a good way. For me, it's very reassuring to know where everyone I care about is kept. And
in a freezer.
In a freezer in the garage with the venison. I don't think it's a giant leap or surprise to say that I'm a tad more sentimental than you are. But before Facebook, I had struggled a little bit with that sense of loss when you drift apart from somebody who used to be important to you. Friends from high school who were actually your friends in high school, friends in college who were actually your friends in college. And that sense that they've gone away and you don't know what happened to them. You don't know if they're alive or dead. You don't know anything about them. I mean, I just heard from a dear friend of mine in junior high school who I had really worried about. And knowing that person sort of lives in cold storage on Facebook and I can reach out if need be, which I occasionally do, is comforting to me. You never really have to throw people away.
I threw a lot of people away. I like throwing people away. There, I burn them as fuel to keep going. God.
All right.
Can I just say that the Pop Culture Happy Hour page, I love you, baby, I can't comment on it because I'm not on Facebook, but that strikes me as a notable exception where there is an actual discourse, somebody saying something, somebody responding to that in an insightful, meaningful way, throwing in links.
This is the point that there are good pockets of everything and terrible pockets of everything.
It's a tiny pocket of Facebook, which I argue is the exception, not the rule.
But you are part of a tiny pocket of good things on Twitter and not 50 Cent. You can do the exact same thing on Facebook, man.
Yeah, I mean, you could on Twitter go live in a giant hive of stupid, but you have chosen not to. I don't see anything about the form or about the medium, because
right.
it is kind of a medium,
yeah.
you know, and you learn to navigate and to manipulate each medium well. I don't see anything about the medium that is Facebook that makes it inherently stupider than Twitter.
And that said, since I got into Twitter, I use Twitter 10 times more often than I use Facebook.
Yeah, I'm drifting in that direction. But I'm with Steven, too. I think Facebook allows you, if you are the sort of person who doesn't necessarily discard people and burn them for fuel, but doesn't have enough energy to keep in touch with people all the time, there's something comforting about being able to do a quick survey, check in, you know, look at what people are up to without necessarily reaching out and writing them a long letter saying, hey, I see that you've done this. Well, I've been doing that. That's what Facebook
still alive, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Very. Well, my tech blind spot is one that is illegal. I'm just going to say. But that many... That was a very funny huff from our esteemed producer, Mike Adams.
I just want to point out that all of us are thinking, are we going to have to talk about something illegal that we do?
No. well, maybe. Mm. I, unlike many people who watch a lot of TV and a lot of obscure TV, am not an illegal downloader of TV episodes. It is really not necessarily out of any enormous moral objection. I don't think I would ever probably take part in a lot of that, but particularly with things that have not been made available on DVD, so you're not depriving anybody of anything. I don't know it's to say that I necessarily automatically never would, but it has always seemed to me like a gigantic pain in the neck that involves a lot of disc burning, which I hate more than anything. So despite the fact that I frequently have things that I would love to catch up on that people tell me, you know, the easiest way to do this is to just torrent it or whatever, I just don't do it. I've never picked it up. I have no particular desire to. Every time that I have even considered it for some special occasion, like I said, I typically don't do it with anything that is commercially available, but every time I've even considered it, I get to the point where the barriers to entry in terms of logistics are adequate to keep me on the straight and narrow. I just don't do it. Yep. And I will not ask anyone else to comment on whether they do or do not, because I know the answer. Anyway. so feel free, obviously, to chime in on our Facebook page where you will not see Glenn. You can check in with us. And let us know what are your tech blind spots. Please do not direct me to where to download television, because that just gets into a whole thing. Other than that, feel free to talk to us about your tech blind spots and to, of course, as always, chastise us about ours. Or you can also do so in the comments of the blog. So having dealt with our tech blind spots, we're going to move on to a quick segment, which is our little game segment. I have a game.
Game?
I got a game right here. Okay. I got a game for you. This is a game I would call Celebrity Twitter Trivia.
Oh, good. All right.
Ooh. Here is a quote from a tweet. This is a celebrity tweeted this in part. Mm-hmm. This is the tweet in part. Hope you guys love it as much as I do. If you didn't, I'll kung fu kick you. Anyone know?
Kurt Gymkhana Thomas.
No. If no one knows, I will give you multiple choice.
All right. Multiple choice.
Okay.
Multiple choice.
Britney Spears on her new video. Adam Sandler on his new movie, a Georgia congressman on his latest budget proposal, or the CEO of Coca-Cola on new Peppermint Coke?
Well, I think it has to be D just through sheer oddity.
Sheer random
Thompson's
strangeness.
Thompson's going with Peppermint Coke. Anyone else?
Except Peppermint Coke? Blah.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Britney.
I'm going to go with Britney, too.
It is Britney.
Woo! Wait, is there a Peppermint Coke?
No.
Okay.
I made that up. How many Twitter followers does MC Hammer have? Rough guesses?
Well, no, I need it.
Approximately 15,000, approximately 100,000, approximately 1 million, or approximately 2 million.
So none of the possible answers is 42.
Anyone?
I mean, I was going to guess something like 20,000, but it's going to be some crazy, ridiculous... It's going to be 2 million.
Thompson's going with 2 million.
He's just a recognizable name. That counts for a lot on Twitter. So I'd say 1 million.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the 1 million.
And the correct answer would be Stephen Thompson.
Oh!
2 million! MC Hammer has approximately 2 million Twitter followers.
Huh.
Jimmy Fallon late night host of my great fondness, mm-hmm. recently tweeted to what television personality you have lost your mind. Your options are Jeff Probst, Ryan Seacrest, Piers Morgan, who recently took over for Larry King, and Keith Olbermann.
Oh.
You have lost your mind, says Jimmy Fallon.
I'm going to say Olbermann.
Thompson goes with Olbermann.
Piers Morgan.
Was the first two.
But I was going to say Probst.
Trey goes with Morgan.
Probst, and what was the second one?
Ryan Seacrest.
Seacrest.
And the answer is Jeff Probst.
If you hadn't said Olbermann, if you'd come up with some different one, I would have said Probst.
Okay, now why? What was the cause?
It has to do with casting and Russell, who was the dude on Survivor. James Franco, as of this afternoon, who is new to Twitter, is following 13 people. Who was the first person he followed?
Oh.
Your possibilities are Steve Martin, Kanye West, Cher, Seth Meyers.
Steve Martin.
Trey goes with Steve Martin.
I'm going to say Kanye.
Steven goes with Kanye.
I'm going to go with Conway.
Conway Twitty.
Conway Twitty.
Kanye?
Kanye.
And the answer is Seth Meyers. He does also follow Steve Martin.
I saw that within his first five tweets, he had replied to Steve Martin.
That's so right. But the first person he followed, according to, if you look at the list, was Seth Meyers. Okay, what female musician kicked off a Twitter discussion last night? It's currently Tuesday, so this was Monday night, about how women musicians do not get action the way that men musicians do.
Can I guess to steal?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Nico Case.
It was Nico Case. It was Nico Case.
I have alerted several of my straight friends who go see Nico Case all the time.
I'm glad you said something before. You're really disappointed in them about this.
I'm like, dude, step it up. It's Nico Case.
Glenn, I'm glad you said something before I did.
It was. And finally, if you're familiar with Angie Harmon, she's on Law and Order. She was on Law and Order. She is now on Rizzoli and Isles on TNT. And there was an incident that happened with her a while ago where she tweeted something like, "Nighttime!" with a bunch of exclamation points. And Dan Harmon, who is the creator of Community, retweeted her, and his comment was something like, "We all have our different thresholds for excitement." And it was one of the simplest and funniest things that I've ever read in my life. So ever since then, I've checked in periodically on Angie Harmon. Angie Harmon's last 24 hours of tweets, as of when I checked in this afternoon, have included how many exclamation points? 24 hours of tweets. 23, 46, 66, or 112.
Oh.
24 hours of tweeting from Angie Harmon. 23, 46, 66, or 112?
I'm going to say 66.
46.
46. 46. Answer is 46.
Hey. Wow.
Very good, Trey.
Trey just happened to have counted
beforehand. Very good, Trey and Glenn. And that brings you to the end of your celebrity Twitter quiz. And you actually all did quite well. And I do encourage you to read. Angie Harmon basically tweets regularly either nighttime or daytime.
I think celebrities who clearly don't quite understand how Twitter works are great fun. Kristen Chenoweth is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
To me, as far as I can tell, the boundary between direct message and full-on tweet is not entirely clear to her.
Yeah.
But which makes for some, intriguing conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also encourage people to follow Nico Case because she's a quality tweeter. She's funny. She's so smart. And she tweets with a lot of comedians as well.
Right. And one of the other women I was going to put on my list of possible candidates for that was Roseanne Cash, who was also a good tweeter and funny and says many witty things on Twitter. So we will definitely give you some links to some of these people's Twitter accounts because they are fun.
Mm-hmm. I have just followed Nico Case. Some
of the celebrities, they are a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So now that brings us to the last traditional segment of our show, What's Making Us Happy This Week. Glenn Weldon, making you happy this week.
All right. Actually, on the blog, I said, this DC Universe Online game is coming out, and I'm not going to play because blah, 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 blah. But, it was my birthday, so I picked up the game.
Happy birthday, Glenn!
Yeah. So,
I can't hang out on Facebook, but...
Well, see, this is the thing. I stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning playing the game when I first got it. But as I said... most of that was devoted to costume design and naming the characters. And I am frustrated with my fellow players because they are not devoting what I feel is sufficient gravity to names. There's a lot of people on there with names like Laser, where the S is a 5. Noob Kill R with a R capital R, all that kind of stuff.
I beat up the weak.
Yeah. I know. It's sad. But my names are things like Professor Zap, and I went back and forth. Went back and forth many times.
I am two calling P's. You Professor Zap P's? For the rest
two
of your
P's?
Life.
Or just P exclamation point. I have a speedster who uses fire powers named Flagrante. Also, I like him. And I have a little dude who makes people, infects them with disease, who uses a bow staff, so he's called, of course, Staff Infection. He's a villain. That probably goes without saying he's a villain. And so when I go home, so I was in a meeting today, and I just kept thinking of new names. So there's Fancy Lad and PH Defender, because he's got a doctorate in justice.
Yes.
Dr. Bombay, he's like the doctor guy, except he throws bombs. The Purple Nurple, he's a giant guy in a schoolboy outfit who just beats people up. I was going to call Professor Zep Professor Puissant, but I thought that might be a little too. Captain Courageous, the Puce Pummeler, and the one that I'm going to run home and do right now, they're a pair, Pool Boy and Speedo.
I can't wait
to do that.
Oh, yes.
I can't wait to come up with their costumes.
Oh,
so I've never played an MMO before. This is really introductory MMO. This is not as elaborate as World of Warcraft or anything like that. I have the PS3. I don't have the headset. So there's all this stuff about other people sort of coming floating near me. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do. There's something I'm supposed to press where I can talk to them with the keyboard pops up. But I'm not going to do that.
That's other humans.
It's close enough to other humans, yes.
It's other semi-humans.
There are times when you don't have to do anything except you just say, I want to go into this arena. And eventually the game says, okay, you are going in with these four random people. And when I go in there, I do not know what I am doing because we're supposed to work together to defeat the whatever. It feels to me like it's third grade and I'm out in right field and I'm looking for four-leaf clovers. And every so often I'll look up and people are just screaming at me for some reason. And I'm so glad I do not have the headset because I'm sure these people are...
Idiot!
But then they're like, there's all this stuff going on that I do not understand. I do not have this lingo. I'm a tank, I'm a healer, I'm a damage per se. I don't know what any of that is. But so you don't have to work together on the early levels. So I just keep going up to like level 10 and then starting over and creating a new character. Eventually I'll figure out this stuff. But it's a lot of fun. It's huge. And the costume design is really fun.
And making you happy.
Making you very happy.
That is awesome. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Well, Linda has stolen some of my thunder. But one of the things that was making me happy this week is that James Franco is on Twitter. So now more than ever, I can pretend that he and I are having a private conversation.
Yes.
Yep. How can we follow him on Twitter?
I encourage that. It's James Franco.
Just James Franco?
Is it James underscore Franco?
No, because, it's just
okay,
James.
Just James Franco. And I'm hoping that there will be some actual backstage nuttery coming down that feed on Oscar night. Because, relatively speaking, the hosts aren't actually on stage that much. The main thing that's making me happy this week is quiet people. NPR's Linton Weeks had a story earlier this week. It went up on Tuesday the 22nd, which is when we taped this, about quiet people. People who, quote, treasure silence for its own sake, end quote, and how that differentiates them from straight-up loners. There's a quote in this story from someone who says, in general, quiet people are a mystery, but in some ways the greater mystery is why the talkative talk. One learns, presumably, from listening, and silence is not generally dangerous, end quote. And that in itself is an observation that makes me happy just all by itself. But another larger reason that this story made me happy this week is that it reminded me of, and it allows me once again to recommend the splendid article, Caring for Your Introvert, which was published in March of 2003 in The Atlantic. The author, as it happens, is another guy I know, which is beginning to make me sound like I'm not, in fact, an introvert, but I swear it's true. This was, for a time, and it may still be, the most popular article ever published at The Atlantic website, and it spawned not one, but two follow-ups. One in February of 2006, so almost 3 years later, and another that following April, if I remember correctly. The original, which is by a guy named Jonathan Rauch, is a really fine first-person piece about what introverts are and how they differ from misanthropes, and why, if you're going to survive in a relationship with them or in a friendship with them, it behooves you to learn a little bit about who they are and how they work.
Very good. So that is what is making you happy this week. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
It's going to come as a surprise that what is making me happy this week is a book.
It is going to come as less of a surprise that this book contains many, many pictures. Mm-hmm. But I would like to pull out a new book.
Props.
Props. Look at me. I'm like Carrot Top. Okay. It is called When I Grow Up. It is by Weird Al Yankovic.
Aww.
It is... Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I wrote the liner notes to the newest Weird Al Yankovic compilation, so I'm not entirely unbiased where Weird Al Yankovic is concerned, but given that my fandom of Weird Al Yankovic dates back until I was a miserable, pockmarked 12-year-old, I feel my love was well-earned before I ever worked with him in any kind of... Well, I've never gotten paid, so not really a professional capacity. Anyway, it is an absolutely lovely, wonderfully written children's book that I bought for my kids over the weekend and read to each of them at their bedtime. And I just wanted to pull out a brief little passage just to give you a sense. He didn't illustrate it. He has an illustrator who does a nice job, named Wes Hargis. The words are just beautifully crafted, very, very Seussian. Obviously, by design. But I thought I would just listen to the cadence that he's working here. Because I have read hundreds and hundreds of children's books to my kids since they were born. And there's a lot of damn doggerel out there in children's books. So it's When I Grow Up, and the character is, you know, sort of telling his class all the things that he wants to be when he gets older. So, or else maybe I'll be the lathe operator who makes the hydraulic torque wrench calibrator, which fine-tunes the wrench that's specifically made to retighten the nuts on the lateral blade that's directly beneath the main radial sockets inside cooling systems on X-14 rockets. And since this profession's as cool as can be, well, who would be better to do it than me? It's just
great.
Wonderfully, wonderfully written. It makes sense that a songwriter... would do a great job writing children's books. This is a terrific one. It is called When I Grow Up.
The vocabulary there is really striking. It seems like it's one of those things that's sort of meant to get kids infatuated mm-hmm. with language, mm-hmm. that's meant to make them want to go look these words up and then go from there.
It's not dumbed down at all. And yet it's the graphics sort of do a nice job of sort of explaining as it goes too. And I also think, in the interest of, a lot of children's books are designed to impart a message. This one has a lovely message coming from someone who carved an entire gigantic career out of writing, silly pop songs. Mm-hmm. So, bless his heart. Weird Al Yankovic.
Very good. What is making me happy this week, as I spoke about on Twitter, I went on Saturday to the movies 3 times. I saw Cedar Rapids, which we've talked about on this mm-hmm. show before, which is excellent. Really excellent. I really, really liked it. I was extremely impressed with it. I highly recommend it to everybody. I saw Unknown, which is terrible, and I do not recommend to anyone, and no one should see it. And it should not, no human being should give a single dollar to the people who made this incredibly unimaginative, pointless, terribly executed, stupidly acted, idiotic piece of tripe.
Wow!
Tripe. Busting out the tripe.
Saying that is what's making me happy to know. But in the evening, I went... and eventually, someday, I'm going to start talking about things making me happy that don't happen at the AFI Silver. But this is not that week. The AFI Silver Theater in Silver Spring was showing the Grease Sing-Along, which I think people in humanity can be divided into people for whom that sounds really fun and people for whom that sounds like being slowly killed, of which I know Glenn is in the second group.
Glenn Weldon currently raising his hand for group number 2.
But, going there, I was very curious about whether people would actually do any singing or not. You never know when you have some sort of crowd sing thing. But it's not unusual for people to be very hesitant to chime in certain situations when you try to get crowds to sing along. But everybody did.
Yeah.
It was just a big, noisy room full of nerds who know all the words. Now, unfortunately, was there one woman there who thought that sing along with the words on the screen means loudly recite every word along with the movie? Yes, there was. How many seats away from me did she sit?
Two.
Perfect.
Yep.
Two. Was there one person? They actually passed around a microphone through the audience so that if you wanted to sing a line into the microphone so that everyone could hear you, you could.
Wow.
Most people declined to
good,
do this.
Yeah, that's good.
Was the microphone eventually grabbed by someone who thought it was hilarious to make the most ugly sounds possible into the mic so that you couldn't hear the people having fun singing? Yes, there was, because there's always one of those, even at a Grease sing-along. But for the most part, it was a raucous, enjoyable, extraordinarily silly experience. I was shocked how many of those songs I still know.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when the words are on the screen, as they are in this, you still can be surprised how much you know the whole song. And I remembered dancing around to this record in the den of one of my friends in elementary school. And it was really a lot of fun. And I will say attending the Grease sing-along was probably what's making me happy this week.
Well, that's the way it should be, Linda Holmes.
It really is. It absolutely
is. And I would just like to say, no matter how many people made fart noises into the microphone, you were not two doors down watching a play about the Black Plague. Which is why I could not go to the Grease sing-along.
It was really funny because we ascertained at some point that Trey and I were next door to each other. Yeah. That Trey was at this play about the Black Plague and I was at the Grease sing-along. And it did seem rather fitting. And I
believe the last text in that exchange of text messages came from Linda Holmes, and it said, I win.
Mm. Yeah. Well, because what happened is I said, well, if you get out and it's not too terribly late, we'll have a drink and, you know, we'll hang out and say hi. And I said, you know, kind of let me know how it's going. And then it was sort of this increasing, oh, it's going to be this long and it's going to have dinner and it's not starting on time. And he was sort of just heading into, I think, the plaguey part of the Black Plague. I think the people were really just starting to rot when I was already sort of the convertibles flying off into the heavens in maybe the stupidest part of Greece, which anyway. Grease sing-along, what's making me happy this week? If you were at the Grease sing-along at the AFI Silver in Silver Spring on Saturday night, I was there. I was singing. I hope you were singing too, but I hope you were not the lady speaking all the lines, because that is not the same thing. I'm just saying.
Right.
So that's what's making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can find us on Facebook, as we've mentioned a number of times. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. That's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. That's, Trey and Graham. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. That's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music. You're listening to it right now, and I'm betting that you're tapping your foot. I'm glad that all of you guys could be here this week again for another little chat.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And I'm glad that all of you could be here, and we will see you next week.